Welcome to Absolutely Critical by Fortress, where leaders across government and industry share how they protect mission-critical systems in environments where disruption, compromise, or failure simply isn't an option. Hey everyone, welcome to the Absolutely Critical podcast. I'm your host, Lee Mangold. So to no one's surprise, the AI revolution is here. Deepfakes, voice cloning, AI-generated images are making impersonation attacks more scalable, more believable, and honestly, harder to disprove in the moment. The biggest IT risks to organizations today are no longer primarily just limited to technology, but how attackers are exploiting normal human instincts like urgency, authority, and familiarity. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. So my guest today has been a longtime friend and colleague of mine, James McQuiggan. James has over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, where he specializes in human risk management, artificial intelligence, and the crossroads of social engineering and AI. As a former CISO advisor at KnowBe4, he delivered thought leadership on topics including human risk management, social engineering, ransomware, and more recently, the threat landscape of artificial intelligence and how that overlaps. Through industry conferences, webinars, and media engagements, he translates complex security concepts into actionable insights for diverse audiences. His extensive background includes a senior cybersecurity roles at Siemens Energy and Wind Division, with expertise spanning cybersecurity standards, incident response, and industrial control system security. James also serves as part-time faculty at Full Sail University, teaching cyber threat intelligence. He is also, and this is how James and I actually ended up meeting for the first time, dedicated community leader, volunteering with ISC Squared as the co-chair of the North American Regional Advisory Council and the chair of the Southeast Regional Chapter, Regional Management Committee, following 8 years as the president and founder of the Central Florida ISC Squared chapter. James, happy to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Wow. That was some bio you put together for me, Lee. I am just blown away and impressed.
Yeah, I didn't read a single line of it. Yeah, it was, yeah.
Thanks for having me on. I'm real excited to, excited to be here. Yeah. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, whether it's on a podcast, at a conference, hanging out in the street, wherever it may be.
Yeah, my only question is why you didn't mention me in your bio, but we'll get to that later for sure. Yeah. So, James, let's get right to it. As I mentioned in the bio, and as you and I have talked a lot about, you've spoken a lot about AI over the last few years, and your area of expertise, your real focus area, really is on that human factor side of AI. When I hear this, I immediately think of, you know, phishing style attacks, but also more recently, we've been seeing and hearing a lot about deepfakes and AI image generation. My big question, and we know a lot of this, we've seen a lot of this, but how are we seeing this in a business context?
Yeah, from the business perspective, when it comes to artificial intelligence, especially when we look at the social engineering, because for me, cyber criminals are going to target the humans because it's a lot easier to attack them than it is the technology. I mean, yes, there's plenty of zero days and exploits and vulnerabilities that are out there. You know, you got to patch it, get the systems patched and all that. But a lot of the time, cyber criminals find their way into those organizations through the human. For me, anybody that's got an email address in your organization has a key to the front door. Wow. So think about your own homes. Think about who's got keys to your house. Or maybe you've got one of those thumbprint readers or keypad entries or a Bluetooth, door lock. But thinking about who's got a key to your front door, you've got to think about that with your organization as, you know, security leaders and everything else. Who's got a key to the front door? Who's got access? Whether it's users or agentic AI, you know, all the different API calls that you might be doing to third-party vendors or external systems or even inside your own network. Looking at all of those identities, and cyber criminals are looking to the human, again, because of the, we'll say, a soft target. They look at them as a soft target that they can convince. They can hit them with an emotional response. They can hit them with a hierarchical position, pretending to be a CEO, CFO, manager. and get them to take a certain action because they're the CEO and I need you to do this. And it's funny because, well, it's not funny as in haha, it's funny as in ironic because we were dealing with this 6-7 years ago when you would have, and it's probably still going on, where you would have leaders in organizations reaching out to employees going, hi, I need you to go get some gift cards for a client or whatever.
Right.
But the whole gift card scams with Apple. I mean, what CEO needs Apple gift cards to give to their clients? But, you know, we're past that. We got to the point where you got policies in your organization that go, your CEO will never contact you to go buy gift cards. But now we're back around what's old is new again. And that's kind of the theme with a lot of the different AI attacks that are out there is what's old is new again. We've got cyber criminals leveraging hierarchical scams essentially to get employees to take action because of I said so and I'm your boss and I can get you fired. Ah, okay, I got to go get, yeah, I got to go transfer the money. And we've seen number of instances in some big stories over the last number of years where, you know, you had an employee get a email and a text message that came from the CFO asking about wire transfers and wanting to transfer money. And the employee pushed back and was very skeptical. But they followed it up with then a video call. And when you get a video call and you see the person there, and okay, might be a little distorted because, you know, we know all the video software that's out there is, you know, going to show you a perfect, you know, high resolution.
Listen, if you're trying to say there's ever anything wrong with Teams,
I'm not calling anything out. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different platforms out there. I've had the pleasure of playing with all of them, so to speak. You know, all of them, you know, won't give you that full resolution. Or you could be going, oh, I've got a bad connection. I'm connecting on my hotspot and your image is distorted and the voice is breaking up. Or, you know, the voice doesn't sound right. Oh, I hurt my nose the other day, or I've got a cold. That's kind of one of the fun ones. But they get on the video call and it makes it that much more believable for the end user. Like, oh, a video call. Okay, all right. But they're not looking at where the video call is originating from. They're connecting into it, maybe a Zoom link, or it looks like a Zoom link.
Right.
It's not zoom.us, it's zoom.com or .com, whatever. And they're, you know, connecting in on that. That unfortunate incident caused the organization to have $25 million go walk out the door, not on one transaction, on nine.
Oh my God.
Nine different transactions totaling $25 million. It was a wake-up call. It was a shock. I know the CISO for that particular organization has spoken several times and said it was an extremely sophisticated attack. And you're right, it was, because they were layering multiple different attack vectors. They were doing chat. They were doing phishing. They were following up. They were letting them know, hey, you're going to get a video call. Here's the link. So it plays up. We look at it as cybersecurity professionals going, all right, well, you shouldn't have believed it from the chat. But when you're dealing with those kind of environments. Now, we have had organizations be impacted where you had the CFO get a phone call from the CEO. And this is of a large luxury car manufacturer. And essentially, the CEO is asking him, we got to transfer this money. Same stories. What's old is new again. I'm getting on a plane. I'm not going to be reachable. I need you to do this transfer. This has got to get done. And the CFO took a beat and said, okay, I can get it taken care of. Really quick, you recommended a book to me the other day. What was that?
Yeah.
And that just threw the scammers, and they were able to essentially, they were ended up hanging up, and he felt there was something just slightly off and essentially allowed, you know, him to see through it, and the cyber criminals, you know, didn't get away with anything. But we're seeing more and more of these attacks happening where cyber criminals, scammers are trying to come in through the employees, leverage the hierarchy positions, your CFO, CEO, manager. For years, we had business email compromise, and you would have scammers, cyber criminals get into email systems of a vendor, of an organization that had customers and clients, and then send off those updated account changes.
Right.
I think that's the next level. I think that's where we're going next.
I think we're going to start.
We're going to start having suppliers and vendors coming in on deepfakes to get them to change information rather than an email.
I was going to say there, it just sounds to me like that same attack vector, right? Of if you can compromise somebody's Microsoft account, you get on their Teams.
Yeah.
Right. That was always it's one of the things that we know obviously very deeply in IR is when you think somebody's account is compromised,
right?
Don't try to contact them through the account that you think is compromised.
Right.
Right. Like you have to have that other channel. So and we use several different ones at Fortress, but I think it's an interesting idea of having sort of that code word. I don't know that scales very well, but I do like that. I do like that.
Code words are good, but it depends, and you're right. It all depends on how it scales. Mm. That's too many code words for people to try to remember.
All right.
Yeah. Code words are good for family, for small circles. You got a small business? Sure, go with a code word. Right. You got a family? Go with a code word. I know for certain, I'll put money on the table. My family and my cousins here in the U.S. And if they listen to this, they know exactly what I'm going to talk about. But there is, and we've done this before, because a lot of us are involved in security or fraud or investigations, and so we're very aware. Mm-hmm. And in the event that one of us reaches out and go, hey, look, I've been in a car accident, can you send me some money? We know that we have a code word, and all I got to do is say two words, and if I don't get the right two words back, I know it's not them. And I've actually done it where I had a cousin reach out to me and it just seemed a little weird. She goes, James, gives me the two words. It's really me. And I'm like, hey, I'm just checking. It just seemed kind of weird. So,
So what are those two words? I'm just curious.
Oh, what are the two words? Get lost.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Right. You know what? I would actually believe that. No.
No, but usually asking questions is what's going to trip up the scammers. And whether it's family members or coworkers or your boss or the CEO, asking that question has been what seems to be working time and time again, because they're not going to know the answers. And especially if it's something unique and only that person would know, or maybe they don't know and you're just looking to trip them up. The questioning is going to go, be curious, be skeptical. Right. That's going to go a long way in helping trip them up.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that's one of the pieces of advice that I would always give. And it was so funny because I had to be given this advice a number of years ago when you're talking about like what is suspicious activity. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was working for the Army, there was we always had to do these suspicious activity reports and things like that. And I remember asking that question. And I remember the security manager at the time telling me the obvious. Well, if you think it's suspicious, it's suspicious. Well, that's okay, that's obvious answer, but okay. And actually, I understand that, right? It's just kind of funny. But yeah, I think that having that healthy suspicion is good, and it is going to be part of society going forward.
Yeah.
Right?
It's going to come down to your human intuition.
Yeah.
And intuition is based on your cognitive biases and everything else. And that's all based on your experience, your history, your awareness, what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've read. And that goes into it. I mean, nowadays, if you and I were hanging out in New York City and a guy walks up to us and opens up his jacket and goes, hey, I got a Rolex. You want to buy it? Right. You and I are both going to know, and probably most of society are going to go, yeah, no, we're good. We know we know those are fake because we've heard those stories. Yeah. But when it comes to a lot of the deep fakes, a lot of folks have heard about it but haven't experienced it or known anybody that has experienced it quite yet. So it's still got a ways to go.
And, you know, I want to talk about sort of how to prevent some of this. But, you know, the first time I really saw this kind of in action was a presentation that Rachel Toback had given. Mm-hmm. And just showing just how insanely easy all of this actually is. And the more video, the more pictures of somebody you have, the more audio of somebody you have, the more data you have to work with, the higher fidelity that model gets and that image gets, right? You know, I think that's a scary thing, because what are we doing right now? Right? We're sitting here on camera. We're talking. You didn't need this much audio of either of us to do anything. But here we are. So, I mean, what are we left to do in those kinds of situations other than just being skeptical?
Yeah, I mean, it. You really only need about 10 seconds. They're saying three to get 85% accuracy. Being in IT, being in cybersecurity, being the people that we are in this industry, we know the more data you have, the better model, the better decision, the better whatever you can make. So for me, when it comes to doing deepfakes that I've done dozens of, I've made them from still images, I've made them from video that's already out there on YouTube, where I'm able to sync their lips. The software basically just changes the whole mouth area and matches to the audio that I have generated, where the audio I only give it about 30 seconds. It doesn't take a lot. So, you know, what we've talked about already is plenty for the data. Now, to do real voice content, real-time voice content, you need a lot more because it has to be able to build it in real time versus process it, put it in a video, and then you get it out. But when it comes to doing deepfake face swaps, which is kind of the what they use in a lot of the attacks, or they will just use pre-generated videos through it. But to do face swaps, you do need some higher technology. You need systems that have a higher graphics card, more RAM, and processing capabilities, kind of like the laptop that I'm using here today, because it allows me to do this.
And for those who are, it's awful. So for those who are listening and not watching, James has now changed his face to look like mine, and you put up, okay, that's, that is terrifying. So for those who are watching that, James, you could stop that at any time right now. That'd be great.
I can stop at any time now. Oh, okay. Well, I can also be Robert Downey Jr. too.
Yeah. And you know, kind of what I'm noticing there is, you know, I would not fall for that trickery. And I think that's that healthy, number one, right now, that's the healthy skepticism,
right?
But that's just a matter of time.
But the other one I love to throw, this program that I have is great, because the other person I love to throw up here is this guy. Our good friend Ira Winkler.
Ira.
So anyway.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, so
I think it's really interesting, right? Like, and that was live. That's off your laptop. Yep. That is sufficient to fool quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a whole lot of you know, you clicked a couple buttons on that one, right?
Yep. Like when, yep. And then I could click another one and I could be sounding just like Ira, or just like you, but I have to build that model. And that does take a bit of time. But once I have that model and I'm set, then I could jump into a Teams call over at Fortress and, you know, tell whoever your CTO or your CEO and just tell them that, you know, I've had enough fun. I think I'm going to go on my own now. I'll see y'all later. You can keep my stock options. I don't want them.
Right. Yeah. Let's maybe not do that. You know,
Not. No, I do like my career where I am, and I do like not being in jail. So
yeah. Right. Yeah.
Talk about the information that's out there. Yeah. How do we protect ourselves? We are sitting ducks. So yeah. Quack, quack, in all the biggest ways possible. And we kind of touched upon it already in the fact that code words can work, but you basically are going to have to rely on questions. You're going to have some skepticism, because they're not only generating videos of real people, but we're leveraging things like Gemini or Kling AI and creating realistic, ultra realistic videos of events that are going on. Now, I wouldn't be surprised. I haven't looked yet, but I would have no doubt that there are probably several videos circulating around on social media of the events that are happening in Minnesota, sadly, the events that are going on.
Yeah.
We've already seen incidents with relating to the Iraq-Israel war. We saw a lot of deepfake videos yet come out and then get debunked by several forensic companies that do analysis of deepfakes and put that information out there. Unfortunately, a lot of those deepfake detection tools aren't readily available for the consumers, for the public. Right. They are readily available for journalists, media, police, law enforcement, and so forth. There are some technologies and software that's available for organizations, enterprise organizations, because that's who they're catering to. What I'm looking forward to, and we need as a society, is in the social media, because a majority of our society is now getting their news from social media. And when you've got things like Gemini creating essentially deepfake videos, synthetic videos of, you know, we had when the LA riots were going on, we had the National Guard, Bob was his name, shoot, you know, doing 10-second videos from behind the scenes, you know, things going on, which were all completely fabricated and all completely inaccurate. But those disinformation campaigns is what's also being targeting towards industries. But you could also leverage it for businesses as well, for corporate espionage. You could have it where pretending, and it doesn't have to be a, like an Apple, a Facebook, or a big company. It could be a small business where you put a deepfake video, you're bidding for a contract, let's say, and you make a deepfake video of the CEO, you know, ranting off on racial slurs.
Right.
You know, and, you know, doing, you know, pretending, you know, putting them at the scene in Minnesota, you know,
right,
you know, going undercover as, you know, ICE or whatever, you know,
right.
your imagination can run with it. But if they wanted to put something out there and make that deepfake video and put that out there to damage the reputation, that's going to be huge. And without a real way for social media for us to come back and go, we recognize this is a deepfake, we're going to be running into some problems soon.
Yeah, it's a whole new level of reputational harm risk,
right?
Right, like, and you know, it's not to be lost on me or anyone else that even when we're talking about disinformation campaigns at that national level, right, and even when politics gets involved and all of that, it shouldn't be lost on anyone that, you know, a big percentage of businesses in this country are part of the defense industrial base, and seeing a campaign come out where something's fabricated, you may be taking direction from, you might be taking the wrong direction, right? Yeah, so it's very, very interesting. And it is an interesting road ahead. I absolutely agree with that. I kind of want to pivot a little bit here. You and I talked a little bit in the past about how AI is getting involved in GRC space.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, when you think about, you think back 3 years, 2023, we've got ChatGPT launched on the scene and, you know, 100 million users or however many it was, you know, using it quicker than any other tool. And people start looking for ways that they can incorporate that into their organization. You know, early on, it was like, hey, I got it to write a phishing email, or hey, I got it to write malware.
Right.
Now we're looking at it as like, how can it help me be more efficient in my role? You had programmers uploading source code into it. Big mistake. Yeah. So nowadays it's like, okay, how can we use generative AI, its capabilities, machine learning, agentic AI within the GRC space? And so I know that we're starting to see organizations slowly work into it, you know, between 40 and 50% of organizations trying to use it where it can ingest all of your, you know, all of your data, all of your evidence and information, and then it can go through and do that, you know, compare, do that audit for you and come back with information, help you write policies. I was sitting on stage at a conference a number of years ago, I think it was in 23, and somebody said, we need to, if with AI, generative AI needs to be in a data policy, and we need to get a data policy written. And I asked ChatGPT to write me a data policy and then showed it up. And I said, all right, I got the policy, now what? He wasn't very happy with me. I don't think he took that as a joke. But, you know, for me, and this goes back to what I talk about with my students at Full Sail with cyber threat intelligence, ChatGPT is a tool. It's not there to do your homework for you. It's not there to write your policies for you. It's there as a tool. It's there to get you started, get you baselined. You know, you can have it ingest all your other policies, and depending on, you know, how public that information is, you might do it where you do an on-prem large language model. Right. If you've got, you know, relationship with Microsoft where your information is contained, or with Google, same thing, have it ingest in there and go, okay, based on all these policies, we need one for AI and here's all the requirements and everything else. Right. So you can start looking at that, being able to, you know, leverage it to be able to find the areas, you know, that are, you're missing evidence or you need more information of.
Yeah.
Because it's allowing you to, you know, hopefully be more efficient in that risk monitoring, risk reporting, you know, maybe even trying to automate a lot of that you know, compliance workflow, evidence gathering, you know, the reporting, the audit prep, trying to get everything ready. It could be something where you could literally have it all inside of a, like a notebook LM, and your auditor shows up and goes, all right, ask it any question. It'll give you what you need.
That's mildly terrifying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's, I can think of probably a dozen different ways in which it would be kind of interesting. You know, one of the things that you see a lot of, and you mentioned it, is using generative AI to develop a policy, right? And for those of us who spend a way too much of our time and careers writing policies and procedures and standards and guides and things like that, you know, at one hand, on one side, I feel like, you know, I've done my time and I know how to do this, and I don't mind some help. But on the other side, you know, it's really easy to fall into that exact same trap that we always see, where somebody wants to get, you know, insert name of certification here, SOC 2, right? You can go online, do a Google search for SOC 2 policies. Like, you can download them right now and they're technically all SOC 2, you know, they'll get you through. Doesn't mean you do any of it, but the policies will get you through. And yeah. and I do have a little bit of a worry about that in particular, because ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, all of them, they all have the ability to pull all that information and just write you a really great policy. But yeah, ultimately it is back on you to figure it out.
Yeah. And that comes down to your governance, right? And so, and there's a variety of different frameworks out there already. NIST has got one. There's an ISO cert. You can get it.
Yeah.
For any of your listeners in the EU, you know, you've got the EU AI, AI Act that's over there as well. Yeah. And we're seeing more and more. I mean, states are trying to come up with their own AI policies, but the governance is a key aspect when it comes to it, and being able to leverage AI for your governance as well is going to go a long way.
I am actually excited about a lot of the AI implementations inside of a GRC platform. You know, things like, you know, are there any risks that I'm missing? Or you know, here's my environment. What are the risks? And it's not going to give you the 100% answer, but that's why I have a job still, right? Because I don't need the 100% answer. Show me what I might, those gaps where I might have missed something. I've done that a little bit in the recent past, and it has been very, very, we'll say, instructional for sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm really, really interested in the future of that. I think there's a lot of power in that.
And of course, the one thing to remember with all of this is that human in the loop is the fun term buzzword now, that human oversight. But for me, and I've been saying this for 3+ years when it comes to AI, when I fly and I get on the airplane, I look to the left and I see two pilots. Even though I know that plane can taxi, take off, fly, and land all by itself on autopilot.
Yeah.
But you need the pilots there. Same thing with our AI programs. We still need the human. May not need as many, in which that's a whole other topic, but you still need that verification, that human oversight with regards to, especially on large decisions. Because we've seen where some organizations, IT folks put AI in and said, hey, optimize our database. And it said, okay. And it wiped it out.
Yeah. It's optimized though.
It's optimized.
There's no data. It's the queries are really fast then. Yeah. Well, James, I really appreciate you being here, buddy.
Of course.
I want to give you kind of the opportunity to kind of wrap up here. And if there's that kind of that one piece of advice, and I think we could all use just one piece of advice, right? But that one piece of advice to send us home with, what do you got?
You know, we kind of need our own zero trust with everything. And again, I know buzzword, but it's okay to be politely paranoid. It's okay to be skeptical. We are going to see, sadly, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better on the deep fakes and detections. If it's too good to be true, you know, if you're reacting to it emotionally and you're wanting to share it out because, oh my God, this horrible thing or whatever else, take a moment and kind of look at it and go, okay, why am I freaking out over this? Is this something I should share? Can I verify this? We've seen it with images. We've seen it with videos already happening, but society has a tendency to believe immediately what they see and what they hear. And we have to at least now kind of have that trust and verify, or, you know, verify then trust it, essentially overall. So get those verification systems in now where, you know, with your family, maybe it's a code word, maybe it's a question, because it's not hard for cyber criminals or scammers out there to go find a target and then go look at their kids and get their voice from social media, because it's readily out there. Right. Again, they only need 10 seconds, really, to be able to generate it.
Yeah, that's scary stuff. Well, James, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for being on the podcast, man. Where can people find you online, James?
Certainly on LinkedIn. I'm posting on a regular basis. I do have my website, jamesmcquiggan.com. My email, my contact info is out there. But LinkedIn's kind of the best place where you'll find me on a regular basis, posting and sharing stories and information, thought leadership, and that kind of thing.
Awesome. Thanks again, James. Everyone, that is it for this episode of the Absolutely Critical Podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation today, subscribe, share it with others, and we'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye.